नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
To begin the first verses of the last chapter of Canto 3. Chapter 33, Activities of Kapila, meaning the instruction section is now completed, 8 very rigorous chapters, Sankhya philosophy, Dhyan yoga, Bhakti yoga, and the consequences of neglect in the yoga system, adverse fruit of activities. So yesterday we completed the summary of all that section, and now begins chapter 33. I'll just read the verse in purport. This is now again Maitreya Uvacha. Maitreya is inquiring about this exchange between Devahuti and Kapila. Devahuti, the mother, Kapila, incarnation of the Lord as her son. Maitreya is explaining this. So Maitreya said, thus Devahuti, the mother of Lord Kapila, and wife of Kardama Muni, became freed from all ignorance concerning devotional service and transcendental knowledge. She offered her obeisances unto the Lord, the author of the basic principles of the Sankhya system of philosophy, which is the background of liberation. And she satisfied him with the following verses of prayer. So I think we'll just read the first verse of prayer along with this purport. So this is kind of summary of the past and introduction of the whole chapter. Purport. The system of philosophy enunciated by Lord Kapila before his mother is the background for situation on the spiritual platform. The specific significance of this system of philosophy is stated herein as Siddhi Bhumin. It is the background of salvation. Persons who are suffering in this material world because they are conditioned by the material energy can easily get freedom from the clutches of matter by understanding the Sankhya philosophy enunciated by Lord Kapila. By this system of philosophy, one can immediately become free, even though one is situated in this material world. That stage is called Jivan Mukti. This means that one is liberated even though one stays within his material body. That happened for Devahuti, the mother of Lord Kapila. And she, therefore, satisfied the Lord by offering her prayers. Anyone who understands the basic principle of Sankhya philosophy is elevated in devotional service and becomes fully Krishna conscious or liberated even within this material world. So now Devahuti. Devahuti said, Brahma is said to be unborn because he takes birth from the lotus flower which grows from your abdomen while you lie in the ocean at the bottom of the universe. But even Brahma simply meditated upon you, whose body is the source of unlimited universes. Purport. Brahma is also named Aja, or he who is unborn. Whenever we think of someone's birth, there must be a material father and mother, for thus one is born. But Brahma, being the first living creature within this universe, was born directly from the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, the Vishnu form lying down in the ocean at the bottom of the universe. Devahuti wanted to impress upon the Lord that when Brahma wants to see him, he has to meditate upon him. Quote, "You are the seed of all creation," she said. Although Brahma was directly born from you, he still had to perform many years of meditation, and even then he cannot see you directly face to face. Your body is lying within the vast water at the bottom of the universe, and thus you are known as Garbhadakshayi Vishnu. Paragraph. The nature of the Lord's gigantic body is also explained in this verse. That body is transcendental, untouched by matter. Since the material manifestation has come from his body therefore existed before the material creation. The conclusion is that the transcendental body of Vishnu is not made of material elements. The body of Vishnu is the source of all other living entities, as well as the material nature, which is also supposed to be the energy of that Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devahuti said, quote, "You are the background of the material manifestation and all created energy. Therefore, you're delivering me from the clutches of Maya by explaining the system of Sankhya philosophy is not so astonishing. But your being born from my abdomen is certainly wonderful, because although you are the source of all creation, you have so kindly taken birth as my child. That is most wonderful. Your body is the source of all the universe, and still you put your body within the abdomen of a common woman like me. To me, that is most astonishing." Just reading this verse, it's reminiscent of Queen Kunti's appreciation of Krishna. In a similar way, you who are unborn take birth. That's a contradiction. And the nature of the Absolute Truth, being the source of everything, is implicitly beyond the capacity of something material like the material mind to conceive of, because within the Absolute is everything. There's the whatever you want to think of, and there's its opposite, and that's within the Supreme Lord, who contains all things. Something that I learned from visiting China is everybody knows in China yin-yang, that symbol. And it indicates material duality. There's this thing and then there's its opposite. There's not a denial of transcendence, but there's no indication of transcendence. But the implication simile is inferred. If there's a situation where there's duality, there must be a realm of non-duality. And so the position of transcendence, the position of Krishna in relation to Kunti, and the relation of Kapila Dev in relation to Krishna in relation to Kunti and Kapila in relation to Devahuti. There, of course, Kunti is not the mother of Krishna, but the aunt of Krishna, and similarly, so that for that means she's taken her birth, Krishna has taken her birth, his birth, as the son of her brother's wife, Devaki, the mother of Krishna. So how can Devaki be the mother of Krishna or Kunti be the aunt of Krishna when he's the source of everything? It's a contradiction. It's not possible. So on the one hand, it's not possible and it's possible. The Vedic wisdom touches on this transcendence and this world of duality in what I call Upanishadic double talk. He walks and he does not walk. He's very far away and he's very near as well. He's within within everything and he's not within everything. He's outside of everything and he's not outside of everything. You know, cut it out. Is it this or is it that? Because if it's this, then it can't be that. And if it's that, it can't be this. And without identifying by name, rather the pronoun saha, or that, whatever that is, the absolute truth, has these apparently, from the mind, the binary processor of the mind, contradictory attributes. How to resolve this? Well, knowledge of the Bhagavatam explains this knowledge of transcendence. Vedanta tat tattva vidas tattvam yaj jnanam advayam. Advayam, the realm of transcendence is non-dual, advaya, has different features. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdyate. It's much easier to be an impersonalist. To say, you know, as far as our rational faculty is concerned, to say, well, if this is a place of duality, then the absolute must be non-dual. You know, definition by negation. The na-iti, neti-neti process. What's transcendence? Well, here there's variety, so transcendence must have no variety. Here there's personality. So the transcendence must have no personality. It's without this, na iti. That's discounting the possibility, or what to speak of the reality, that in transcendence there's diversity that's non-dual. Otherwise, the absolute must be minus something by logic, inference. So how can that be? If there's something that the absolute cannot be, then it's not absolute. From where does this variety come? From a place of variety lessness? There must be transcendental variety. But that transcendental variety is of a different nature than this variety that, just as the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita describes, the banyan tree example, or a tree where instead of the branches growing up and the roots growing down, it's the branches are growing down and the roots are growing up. There's no such tree, but there's a reflection of a tree on the body of a lake or water. So in that reflecting surface, the branches grow down and the roots grow up. Thus, the material world is compared to the reflection of the spiritual reality. So in spiritual reality, there must be variegatedness. If there's an apple in the tree, there must be an apple in the tree. As above, so below. for whatever exists here, there must be there in the Absolute. Otherwise, the Absolute is incomplete. There's something here that's not there. It must have variegatedness, but variegatedness that's absolute. So, go back to the reflection. The reflection is accepting the reflection as reality. That which is not is accepted as that which is. It's called Maya. Ma-ya, not this. And accepting not this as this. Being covered by Maya means accepting the reflection to be the reality, accepting the covering to be the self, rather than just start with the position of the soul, rather than the soul within. That animating factor of the body, and when the animating factor leaves the body disintegrates. The elements go back to their reservoir of elements. Water to the reservoir of water, air to the reservoir of air, and earth to the reservoir of earth, and the elements back to their elemental state, and the integrating factor is the spark of life within. It's not to say that we don't have a body, it's to say that the body is not the self. So, maintaining the body, giving it some food, giving it some rest, giving it some water, giving it necessities, and doing that in a regulated and proper fashion. That's something that needs to be attended to. But neglect of the spark of life within, that's a problem. So Maya takes one away from that spiritual reality. Covers spiritual, the consciousness of spiritual reality. That's unfortunate. And then one goes down the path, as the previous two chapters were describing, the path of acting without knowledge or acting in ignorance. So circling back to chapter 25, this is 33, Devahuti is asked a question of her son, who she understands is the personality of Godhead. She's clear about that. He's the personality of Godhead. The mystery is how the personality of Godhead has taken shelter. He who is the source of everything has taken shelter within her womb and taken birth. That's a mystery. She sees him as the personality of Godhead, and she's asking him, because this Maya potency is your potency, can you remove it, please? Because I'm bewildered. And I'm in anxiety and distress and difficult circumstances of my life. This is your illusory potency. Can you remove it? So he gives this as the summary verse, text one. He's given everything. Sound vibration. Within that sound vibration is knowledge. And knowledge, jnana, dipena, with the shining lamp of knowledge, aham ajnanajam tamaha, I destroy the darkness born of ignorance. The darkness is the darkness of forgetfulness of ourself and transcendence, our connection with spiritual reality. And so the torchlight of knowledge given by Kapila to Devahuti has taken that away. And now she's offering prayers to the personality of Godhead. She pays her obeisances. It's her son, but she understands her son is not just her son, and she's stating it. This is a big mystery. The reference is Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma is Aja. He's born without birth, because birth in the sense of mother-father. He's born without mother-father. He's born directly from the body, or the navel lotus flower coming from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. He's Aja. But in order for him to have awareness of his source of emanation, he had to do his tapa, his austerity, and his meditation. So, like Lord Brahma, she's comparing herself. You're my son, but you're not my son. You're the personality of Godhead. And to understand you properly requires this qualification of illumination, of knowledge, which you've very kindly done by this sound vibration, giving these wonderful teachings. And then the final part is, I find this bewildering. You, who are the source of Lord Brahma, and then in turn the source of all other offspring, all other praja, I being one of them, you are the source of everything, including me, yet, mysteriously, you've allowed yourself to take shelter within my womb and take birth from my womb and become my son? It's a fascinating conflict of emotion. She has motherly affection, naturally, but salya rasa, naturally. That's why the Supreme Lord became her son, is because of her parental love, motherly love. At the same time, she's enlightened, and she recognizes, you're not my son. You're the personality of Godhead. So it's conflicting emotion, naturally. Like Kunti, conflicting emotion. She's the aunt. Krishna comes before Kunti, respectfully touching her feet, bowing down and touching her feet. And she's, that's conflicting for her. Because although it's culturally the right thing to do, she's in the superior position. He's the nephew, her brother's son. So the etiquette is proper, but the spiritual emotion is conflicting. She has a hard time with that. And we'll hear the rest of what her prayers have to say. It's a wonderful section. And it finishes the whole chapter. It's a very short chapter, actually. It's nice to hear from Devahuti what her realizations are after she has heard everything that 8 chapters cover. She's clear. Her consciousness is clear. And she has these conflicting emotions, transcendental emotions. That's okay. We can have conflicting transcendental emotions. Being in full knowledge, it's not a wrong thing. It's transcendental emotion. He'll resolve it, just like with when Krishna released Vasudeva and Devaki from Kamsa's prison after killing Kamsa. Krishna stood before Vasudeva and Devaki, and they were in this awe and reverence mood. You killed Kamsa. He is the terror of the universe, at least the terror of the planet. And just with one, you finished him. We heard all about it. You're not an ordinary person. You're the personality of Godhead. But that was their reverential mood. It's described specifically in the Bhagavatam. Krishna and Balaram wanted their parental affection. So Krishna covered them with his yogamaya potency. They forgot his divinity and embraced him like their son. That's what Krishna wanted. So Kapila is accepting the prayers of Devahuti. He's more in the position than Krishna was. He's more in the position of divinity. So there's grades and gradations of transcendental feeling. This is a science of rasa that's described elaborately in Nectar Devotion and its sequel, Ujjwala Nilamani. end with that, see if there's any questions or discussion. Okay. Variegatedness within the absolute realm?
Yeah.
Or variegatedness within the realm of duality? Yes, there is. There's variegatedness here, but the variegatedness is appearance only. Just like I'm looking out the window. There's a tree, there's a street, some cars going by, and there's a house. There's variety. Wait a while. It's all gone. So, is it real? Or is it not real? Or, so it's temporary based upon the configuration of matter according to prakriti, material nature, the modes of nature and karma. Someone built the house, etc. Living entity has taken birth as a tree. Somebody's got a car going up and down the street. It's asat in the absolute sense, from the Bhagavad Gita perspective of the absolute sense, it's asat, it's temporary. Sat meaning eternal, asat meaning not eternal or temporary. So the variegatedness here appears to be variegated, but it's nothing more substantial than a dream. This is a reflection of that, where there's actual variegatedness. Take another example. I'm sitting in a chair. Once upon a time, there wasn't a chair. And sometime in the future, there isn't going to be a chair. It's going to be something else. The elements that make up the chair are described in Bhagavad Gita. Those are Krishna's energies: earth, water, fire, air, ether, and combinations. Now we have a chair. And when the chair is over, and it's back to earth, water, fire, air, ether. So is it a chair or not a chair? Temporarily it's a chair. But what it is permanently is earth, water, fire, air, ether. There's variegatedness there, and that variegatedness is the natural variegatedness. And then in comes the living entity that has desires and some material intelligence and can take the elements and put them together to make a chair. Living entity's gone, time passes, and the chair goes back to its elements. May take a while, but it'll go back to its elements. Now, that's this kind of variegatedness. And then there's variegatedness in the spiritual world, of which this is a reflection. And there's spiritual variegatedness. It's not material elements that undergo change. It's the spiritual energy that's eternally the spiritual energy doesn't undergo change. But there's variegatedness. There's personality. It's a different set of rules. It's a different operating system that works by the internal potency as opposed to the external potency. And the internal potency aligns all its variegatedness for the pleasure of the Supreme. And here the external potency covers the living entity to accept the covering as reality and forget spiritual reality. That's the function of Maya. But there's variegatedness, and, well, there's three aspects of the Absolute Truth. That verse I only half quoted. Vedanta tattva vidas tattvam yajganam advayam. But then there's different features. Brahmeti, Brahman. Paramatmeti, Paramatma. Bhagavan iti shabdyate. There's variegatedness within the realm of the Absolute in that sense too. There's a non-dual region, the Brahmajyoti. There's the form of the Supreme within the heart, who sojourns in this world, and there's the Bhagavan feature in the spiritual realm. All of them absolute, non-dual. Here things are changed by time and other forces, primarily by time. Time in the modes of nature. Time activates the modes of nature, and the modes of nature transform things. The spiritual world, there's time is eternal and there's no modes of nature. But there's the prototype of the variegatedness here. A reflection. This is the reflection of that variegatedness. And it's eternally existing. It doesn't come into being, say, for some time and go out of being, like the chair, or the house, or the tree. Permanent. In a philosophical sense, there must be. You could say, well, it can't. Well, then it's not the absolute, because then if it can't, then it's not the absolute. It must. There's this and there's its counterpart. But that variegatedness is non-dual. Now, that's a philosophical explanation. Now, how to realize that in truth requires the process of yoga that brings one to the threshold of that understanding and into the realm of transcendence beyond the threshold. The yoga system carries one to that place. And then it's not just theory, it's something one can tangibly realize. As Krishna says in the beginning of the ninth chapter, pratyaksha avagamam dharmyam. This knowledge is meant for direct perception of the self by realization. Pratyaksha avagamam dharmyam. So for the not realized soul, the one who is still conditioned, it's interesting theory. Now, is it fact or just interesting theory? One won't be able to determine the difference, whether it's fact or interesting theory, by taking up the process of realizing it. And otherwise, it'll remain unknown. There's variegatedness in the spiritual world, which defies the binary processor, the mind. We go to the platform of intelligence, and it must. How? I can't understand, but it must. Inconceivable potencies must be there. Otherwise, the absolute is minus something. That can't be. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki.